We have to have good accountability. We have to have a culture of discipline. When we set goals, we're going hell or high water to hit those goals. And everybody in that organization has to rally around that. That has to be the culture. And that culture is led by the top, by the leader saying, I set goals and I hit my goals. And I do whatever it takes. And the only reason I'm not going to is if I'm physically incapacitated to not hit a goal. That is the only reason. And I tell my people, the second reason you couldn't hit your goal.
Welcome to the Edge of Excellence podcast. This show is for current and aspiring leaders that are dedicated to showing up every day in their lives with excellence. We break down the careers of those excelling so you can understand what is out there and how to rise up in every field you choose. Let's get the show on the road, shall we? Your host has spent his life promoting global entrepreneurship, helping 20-somethings find their passion, and working to help others achieve excellence. CEO of College Works, Matt Stewart.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for telling your friends. We've got a great show with a wonderful entrepreneur, Gavin Lansky, the president and CEO of Savvy Homes, second generation and taking it to a new level. He just franchised and he's selling franchises nationwide. Gavin's going to talk a lot about the opportunities that come from pain and how to be conscious and consciously looking for the opportunities in the pain that you encounter. He's going to talk about how to roll into a family business and add to the legacy. And finally, talk about adjusting from small business to a business of scale. Welcome to the show and welcome to the Edge of Excellence. Well, Gavin, thank you so much for making time to be on the show today.
Matt, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
I forgot to mention your bio. Oh, here we go. Gavin has a franchise business. He is passionate about home entertainment and went from being an executive and selling shares in a company to working with his father to, what do you know, when you've got a proven track record, to being put in charge of the family business. So Gavin took over Savvy Home, and it's two A's, S-A-A-V-I, home, from his dad. And over the last decade, helped it become a brand leader in home technology installation, and just recently has moved it into a franchise. And now others have an opportunity to go to SavvyHomeFranchise.com, again, two A's, and possibly become an entrepreneur with Gavin as their leader after years of transforming innovative concepts into thriving enterprises. So Gavin's here to share the story of how do you become an entrepreneur, CEO, maybe go into franchising. But before we get into that, we got to ask, Gavin, what is your definition of excellence?
Matt, I think that's a good question. I've thought a little bit about it and looking at this. And I think my definition is the willingness to continuously improve. For me, excellence is a journey, not a destination. And you know, I think if you're really, really good at something or aim to be, that's sort of the general definition of being an expert in your field. Malcolm Gladwell and the 10,000 hour concept that you may or may not know about, right? But to me, that's only achieved. Yeah. So to me, it's about achieving every day, getting better, and again, the willingness to continuously improve. Because too often, we get stuck or sidetracked and bogged down in things that don't matter and aren't improving. So to me, excellence is about constant improvement.
Yeah.
Being willing to do that every day.
And if you're constant, so Gladwell says takes 10,000 hours to become an expert, but you're saying if you want to be excellent beyond being an expert, it's constant improvement, willingness to improve on a daily basis, which brings me to your skiing. Have you ever thought about how many hours you've skied? Because I think about that 10,000 hours all the time. And as you know, I'm the best skier you've ever seen. And I've been out with you. So you've been witness to it in person, probably trying to take me off my throne, unable to. And I added up how many hours I've skied in my life. And then I did it for mountain biking, which I've just decided to go from backcountry mountain biking to black level mountain biking, or maybe double black, as I hold up my shoulder, because too many broken bones, too many surgeries. I'm backing down on my mountain biking skills due to the pain of crashing. But have you ever added up how many hours you skied?
It's not 10,000. It's over. I don't know how many it is, and you got to count sitting in traffic for some of it. But
no,
you know,
you don't. When you take the lunches out and you boil it down to an average of 6.5 hours a day, which you know is true, and you add up all the days, it won't get to 10,000, which is crazy. But I'm getting off record here. We're supposed to be getting into entrepreneurship, starting a company, leveraging your core competency, the non-EOA, by the way. I saw in your bio, you're a leader in the Entrepreneurs Organization, and you know I love the Entrepreneurs Organization after many years of being in it and being a leader in it. Leveraging your core competency and taking your business into a franchise is the non-EOA. The EOA is everybody starts some random business that doesn't align with their core competency and screws everything up. So I'm glad you figured that one out. But before we get into that, we got to go way back in time. And you grew up in Utah, didn't you?
No, Colorado.
Boulder. Oh, it was Colorado.
Went to high school here, but then went to college in the University of Utah.
Okay, so I knew you grew up in a ski town. So you grew up in Colorado. I should have known that. Then you went to school in Utah, came back to Colorado. What was life like for you in high school? I guess your dad already had the business back then?
So he started in 2004. And it was the same year that I did College Works Painting, Matt, back as a freshman in college in Utah. So he was growing, he started the business here in Colorado. I was getting on running the painting show. So that was in 2004.
Okay. So what was life like for you in high school? Were you trying to get yourself ahead? Did you know to get ahead? Were you focused on one day being an entrepreneur? Were you focused on home entertainment and cool stereo gadgetry? What was going on that either was hindering or helping you in your progress?
My high school career was focused on partying hard, attending Buff games at the CU Boulder. Which back then, again, they were like pretty good, versus now. So, Boulder High was right down the street from Folsom. No, it had nothing to do with getting ahead. It was about, heading the weekends up to Breckenridge and skiing with my family and friends and sneaking up to my dad's place in Frisco and throwing parties on Tuesday and then going to class Wednesday morning. A whole bunch of not really career involvement, but fun and learning that people kind of followed my style and leadership. I mean, I was never afraid to take a risk. I'll tell you that.
So you may not have been getting very good grades. You weren't really focused on all the school activities and the clubs and all that school, college application resume stuff, but you were learning through your extracurricular activities that you might have some leadership potential that you weren't utilizing at the time.
Correct. Yeah. And pouring a lot into my, skiing and ski club. That's what brought me out to Utah was, was the skiing. So could aim to get 100 days in and really thought that I could one day maybe hit the Olympics, kind of go that far. I mean, I loved it enough. So when you talk about passion, I mean, being in the mountains, feeling the snow under the edges. I mean, to me, there's nothing more fun than sliding on snow. And so, that was really what my main focus is. That's why I chose Utah as a path. And, kind of got tripped up to get into business along the way because realized pretty early that there is no money in ski.
You were a racer. So were you trying to be a competitive racer? Were you on the ski team?
Yeah. And ski team for moguls and just figuring out that I wasn't the elite of the elite because I was no Matt Stewart.
And moguls don't count. Moguls don't count anyway. Well, I mean, if there's been a machine that groomed the run, and you're measuring your ski skills, and I hope Terrence Schechter is listening to this right now because I've told him this so many times that it doesn't matter what you do on the groomers at all. And if you're in a ski area, that's not the test of your powers. Your powers are tested where there is no trail and no machinery, and you just go and you go and you go. And I know you've skied with me. I remember.
That's right. In Park City.
I felt sad for you. So you leave. I could talk this trash. You wouldn't be married if it wasn't for me. I was out there in Utah. I was out there meeting with you and training and all that stuff. And then I believe you moved to Colorado as part of a College Works thing, which is another step closer to Lulu, who you met at College Works, which is much different than what I did. my girlfriend came to work with me. You met yours. Yours is the unethical way of doing it, which I very much support because I love both of you. So I can give you as much trash talking as I want. So you're in Utah. So you went there to be on the ski team. Did you get a scholarship? Was it a divisional thing or was it a club thing?
Yeah, it was a scholarship thing. And then I hurt myself early on. Turned it into a club endeavor.
Thank God.
Yep. And gave me that. It was a really tough time, you know, being in the crossroads of what do I want to do? Go back to Colorado, stick in Utah. Wasn't too sure about the culture. Knew the mountains were awesome. Kind of what I was getting into, and fell into a class talk for College Works Painting.
Wow.
You know, always again, seeing my dad sort of evolve companies, being that entrepreneurial mindset, I always thought that entrepreneurship was cool. To me, it was all about control of time. Like I had to be in control of the time and what I wanted to do. So that's where the other jobs I had never worked out for me. I was too selfish with my time and wanted to choose where I was going to allocate that. So that's where I was like, well, entrepreneurship.
And you know, you're playing sports and you blow your knee. And I watched some football player blow his knee on the weekend. And is it a life ending? No, it's a life changing. Could it be a life enhancing? If it wasn't for you hurting yourself, you wouldn't be married to Lulu. You wouldn't have the kids that you have. Oh, by the way, Gavin is the first spouse of a guest. So Lulu used to do the podcast for our business, and then she went off into the wild blue yonder. You can listen to her podcast. There's a whole episode on Lulu. Gavin's the first spouse. So if it wasn't for this hurt knee and whatever's happened to you today that's driven you crazy, whatever problems, we have a whole episode on stress management and all that, but there's opportunities. So Gavin's life changed. He sees another opportunity and you're just going to school, getting pretty good grades, doing the ski thing. And then you decided to do the College Works thing and you kind of drank the Kool-Aid.
Sure. And again, because it fit with how I opened this conversation up with the opportunity to learn, right? That you can learn a lot of different ways, Matt. But you know, to me, my Kool-Aid was the chance to get out, get dirty, lead people, learn, fail forward, get beat up, and learn a lot more through doing. Yeah, I didn't get great grades, but I always went to class, tried my best, but I only learned through the actual experience side of it. And so I found for myself early on quick that, you know, if I really wanted to keep taking those steps, I had to find something to tangibly get out and go to work and go learn. So that's where College Works helped me have that avenue to just fail with a safety blanket.
How are you able to grow College Works to a $40 million business and successfully sell it?
With the team, with the people, with everybody that's involved.
I was reading your bio today and I'm like, wait a second. I didn't know we sold this company. You have a little bio. What's your bio say? It says, while in college, he helped grow the entrepreneurial training program, College Works Painting, which taught college students how to run their own profitable painting business. Lancey helped guide the program to an annual revenue exceeding $40 million. That's true. Across the United States. That's true. Which he successfully sold in 2013. Seems like there might be a punctuation error there or something because we didn't sell it.
I sold my portion of it.
Yeah, I know. I'm just giving you shit. Yeah. That's good. By the way, that's why I didn't go into public speaking. Is because I know that little line was read by me because of my own way of looking at it. Someone else would read it differently. But if you're in public speaking, you have to actually turn that into your speech about and turn it from you building two divisions, right? Two wonderful divisions that you exited and you drank the Kool-Aid forever. You were a manager, mm-hmm. crushed it. You were a district manager, crushed it. You decided to move into Colorado and be a VP. And did you run both states, Colorado and Utah?
Yeah, I bought Colorado from Justin Schultz.
Yeah.
Right. So I grew Utah and then acquired Colorado and did both.
Yeah.
And then, yep, was able to transition out of that. And we grew into Boise as well during that time. So there was a lot of, remember? Yeah. And Barry Parker and that, he was a great guy.
Oh, that I just have this horrible memory of me and Barry Parker in Boise making the mistake of doing this burger challenge. And ever since, I mean, to this day, just laying in this hotel room next to Barry Parker where we both look pregnant because for a shirt that wasn't even free, it wasn't even free. If you ate the burger and the tots and drank the drink, you could buy the shirt for $10 or $20 that said that you did it. And we sat there and it was, I think it was 1 pound of meat, 2 pound of burger fixings, 1 pound of tater tots. So 4 pounds of food and a drink. And I mean, I've never been so uncomfortable. The two of us, I mean, we couldn't move for like 4 hours. It was so painful. That's my memory of Boise. But so you did, okay. I mean, you crushed it, and exited. So you had this painful experience where you get hurt. I think you just said this. Did you actually sit there and consciously think to yourself, I need to look for a new opportunity now? And that's when the person came in. And by the way, College Works is only in the Midwest. We don't have College Works. We might have College Works in Colorado again soon, but it's not on the West Coast. We don't do it on the West Coast. We don't do it on the East Coast. So you can go find a different opportunity. And when your life changes, when you get this hurt or whatever opportunity that looks like a infringement that comes across your bow, or did you sit there and consciously think, okay, that's done, what's next? Or did it just happen? You did.
No, I really did. I remember just being up late, and I looking back now with the things that we've done, I think there's only maybe 4 or 5 real big career decisions in someone's life. And that was one. Yeah, it was just, you know, I had no real direction, no real track. And so knew I wanted to learn stuff, knew I need to learn through doing. And the timing worked out where I could start a painting business.
So is this a thing that you do? You something goes wrong. You crash your car, you blow your knee, you decide that you want to move states. Do you just, you stop, you go, okay, problem equals opportunity. What do I do next? Is that part of a process that you go through? It's a conscious process. Am I oversimplifying?
Yeah, I would say it is. I try to evaluate the upside and really evaluate what's the reality of the worst case downside. Really, if you boil it out, take all the emotion out of it. What is the downside? The reality is there's not, the downsides of a lot of things aren't as much as you emotionally make them out to be. So, you know, the downside is not acting in my book.
So you're facing a stressful situation. Your coping mechanism under a stressful situation is stop and say, what's the opportunity here? How can I use this as a positive thing? And then boom, what's the downside, and evaluating the downside?
And then take action.
Okay, so wait a second here. I'm now conscious of myself. So I'm just thinking about the worst things that happened to me. And 3 times I've basically gone bankrupt. And all 3 times were the great, well, I mean, at the time it wasn't great. And I'm still suffering from like issues that emotion, not personal emotional issues, but spousal issues and things that lingered since my wife seems to never forget. She has never forgotten when I lost all the money 3 times. And it's still, but she also never forget when I left her at home after she had Jake and I took off to go do 9 trainings in a row, which was the dumbest idea, but I did 9 weekend trainings in a row. I worked for however 9 weeks without a break, like 3 weeks after Jake was born. Those, by the way, if you're listening here right now and you get married, certain spouses don't ever forget the mistakes that you make and they come back and haunt you forever. So she brought that up the other day. I'm like, wait a second, babe, he's 21 years old. We got to get over that thing.
Lulu's one of them. So thanks for sharing.
Yeah. I said certain spouses. I'm not going to go any further than that. I think that what you do is what I do. I stop and I go, wait a second. How's this going to work? And I think it's because the most pain I felt in the beginning of my professional career, which for me was all my painters quit. They walked off. I mean, they literally were my roommates and they hated me so much. They stomped on our flower bed as they walked through our own flowers while I had a keg and a barbecue going for a painter appreciation day, and they quit, but they all lived at my house. So they walked out, stomped everything up, which was ours, and then came in the other door and went to their rooms. And it's like, okay, that was painful. Like, and then Gunner sat me down and told me what a horrible boss I was, but what a wonderful thing that was. And I just had, and you know, the people that had this house that was so complicated and I screwed everything up, and how wonderful it was after that. Alan Gaines, who, and all these wonderful, painful experiences that I kind of all, and I wonder if you have the same thing that I haven't even thought of it before. And if you're listening right now through my epiphany, this is an epiphany of 2 very successful people that have been to hell and back a few times. And if you want to deal with stress, and I just did a podcast on stress management, I didn't talk about this. What is the opportunity? We did talk about what is the downside. That's the take deep breaths. How bad is it? You know, and I mentioned my dad's dying of Alzheimer's. there's a real downside there. So there's a real downside. Okay, I'm not going to worry about that because I can't do anything about that. So what's the opportunity? And in this worst case scenario, if someone's dying, the opportunity is to make sure my dad understands how much I love him, understands what he's done for me, spend more time. I was going to go every 2 months. My buddy's like, every 2 months, go every month. Okay, every month, call him all the time. So there's opportunities in whatever the downside is. So you hurt your knee. My dad's passing away. I lose all my money. You probably lost your money before too. What's the opportunity? How bad's the downside? And if the downside's bad, just get by it. Okay. I love that. So you're doing that at college. You do the College Works thing. You go through all these different levels. And you know, most people do College Works for 1 or 2 years. Some, and you got to do well to get promoted. So then, you know, maybe you get promoted. Not very many people get to that level where they're even eligible to go in and do it, because we had to finance it. And there's a lot of people that you're affecting. So you did that and you loved it. And you did well at it. And the model wasn't doing well at the time, and probably wasn't. Yeah, you know, we had some issues there for a few years. And then you decided, okay, pretty good at this, but I'm going to go try something else that I think I can be better at. And you had your dad who was kind of parallel with you starting the business. How do you make that decision? And this is a tough question, because it's, do I persevere? Now, how many times did you persevere through hurt knees and through business challenges? How many times has people persevered through whatever it is? How do you decide when to stop doing the same thing, which you were pretty good at, doing pretty well, because you think something else you can do even better at and prosper even more? How do you do that?
Well, so, you know, I was with College Works for 10 solid years and felt like the relationships I built and the experience I was having.
Years too few.
And so in some of our opinions,
yeah,
you know, so if I have a direct answer to that, I'll just share that. So, you know, the timing, I think, factored a lot into it, right? My dad founded Savvy Home in 2004, grew it a little bit, but not a lot. It was sort of a hi-fi two-channel home theater design company for a lot of years with one employee. And he was at the tail end of his career wanting to kind of retire and exit. I was sort of at this time when we, you know, had people in place where we could actually sell College Works and exit at that time. So the timing of the opportunities really worked out, right?
Are you enjoying the show thus far? We go through so many resources and links with this podcast, it's tough to keep up. I get it. That's why Matt and the rest of the team put together the Edge of Excellence Bundle. In it, you'll find different tools that relate to overarching themes and topics of the show. Things like DISC assessment tools, time management strategies and tactics, stress and anxiety management tools, exclusive videos and episodes from this podcast that is not released anywhere else, and so much more. The best part? As a valued listener of the show, you can access the Edge of Excellence Bundle 100% for free of charge. That's right, for simply being awesome and tuning in. To get access, all you have to do is go to www.collegeworks.com/podcast and fill out the short form there for us to get the bundle over to you. Once again, it's www.collegeworks.com/podcast. Now, back to the show.
That's a good answer. There's two elements to your answer. One is, when you've already persevered, when you've already accomplished your goals, when you've already crushed it. So you never give up, right? And two is, you got to look at your skill set. You got to look at your opportunity, and you got to look at timing. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So the timing was right. Your skill set was right. You see this opportunity. It was also kind of that era where things were changing, right? And mm-hmm. you know, we're losing some of the wires, and we're gaining some of the costs for certain things are coming down. There's more options. It's right around when the Ring people came up with their stuff and, you know, changed the world there a little bit. And so you jumped into this home automation now as an entrepreneur. So did you go in and take your dad over? Did you come in and work side by side with your dad? There's people listening right now who are actually, some of them are in College Works. I've seen it. And they want to go work in their family business, or they want to take over for their family so their family can retire. What's that process like? And maybe give two or three tips to make that process go better for someone that's thinking about doing it right now?
Sure. Well, I think the first is embrace the culture with being able and have the opportunity to work with your family. I mean, there is nothing as cool as having a trust factor with a son and dad being able to go to work every day. So yeah. I think that, you know, don't be afraid of it. Don't shy away from it. It's not this entitlement of it was given to me. In fact, my dad made a point to say, go out and get your ass kicked, you know, first all through your college years if we're ever going to do business together. So, you know, so embrace it because it's an opportunity. And I'll get more to that in a little bit. You know, the how it worked out for us was come under the wing. We set up a formal buyout on paper 12 months in to say, look, you know, we want to transfer all the ownership, all the rights, you know, over to you. And this is not given, this is earned. And so I took earnings that I had made through college works, different investments, you know, put it towards him, and he helped me stage an earnout, you know, over 3 years to pay him.
Did Lulu invest? Did Lulu invest?
No, she didn't. No. So
can I say that little side note? Gavin and Lulu have completely separate bank accounts and financial systems. Completely separate.
That we do have a joint account, but yes, we also have separate.
Completely separate ones, yes. And I think that she competes too. I think there's a measurement of it. Yes.
Weekly spreadsheet conversations. Good. In fact, our love language is spreadsheets. So that's good.
Her episode's a good episode, by the way. You must have listened to it.
I didn't. Not yet, though.
Oh, my check God, it out. Gavin.
I know.
Well, you're
done. We got to communicate better.
Okay, so embrace the culture. Prove yourself first. This formal communication, that's a key in a family business. You better have that formal written communication. Otherwise, you're fighting. Otherwise, you're fighting.
For sure. Yeah. And sort of, you know, shared vision. I mean, my dad was always my mentor in a lot of different realms, not just business, right? We got the opportunity to work together, of course, with Savvy Home and teach me the ranks of home audio and video systems and sort of engineering design. Cause he was the engineer. He was kind of the tinkerer. I was sort of liked home technology, but I have a lot more just entrepreneurial drive and business growth sense. That's really where my systemic add to what he was doing paralleled really well. So we had a good sort of strength weakness relationship that we were able to kind of apply to what he was currently doing. And then add to your point, the different IoT systems to the portfolio product solutions that we could offer our clientele. Right. So that was a period of growth, and he was, you know, looking to exit and kind of ride off in the sunset. So he had a good partner in me to take over the reins, you know, and kind of drive that thing. So every day I'm thankful for that. And back to your point on, you know, looking for the opportunity, Matt, you know, in a challenge, my dad was killed in a car accident in 2021. Mm. So drunk driving overnight, not him, by a drunk driver.
Yes.
And 2 days before Father's Day. That instance in my life flipped everything as it would upside down, and was another one of those moments where hands are up, at a loss, what am I doing? My mentor's ripped away from me. And I've chosen to take that now as an opportunity to work in the legacy of Savvy Home every single day. And a lot of that, applying the structure for our franchise system, has to do with the unfortunate loss of my father, because I get to get up and solve my go-to-work problem. I see his fingerprints all over this thing every day. And so there's a lot of, when you talk about passionate about what you do, well, bullshit, I'm passionate about skiing, you know, but I still got to go to work. But if I have a driving force, which I do now, which is the connection, communication through the business to my mentor and my father, I feel really lucky and thankful that I've been able to solve that connection and find myself working late hours just and getting a kick out of it, because in a way I'm getting clarity and talking to my dad through the process.
Yeah. I went to a round table. You're familiar with these forums. And by the way, if you're an EO, it's called the Entrepreneurs Organization. There's, I think, 50s, probably 75 countries worldwide, probably 30,000 members nowadays worldwide. And everyone has to be a founder, co-founder, controlling shareholder of a company that does at least $1 million in business. And then there's events, speakers, and all that's cool. But the really cool part is what's called Forum. And that's a group of people that hang out once a month and share opportunities and issues. And I was with my Forum, and we're sitting around talking about, you know, values. We have these topical discussions. So David Brooks is talking about kind of a shift from these community who I am, not what I am type of values promoted by Instagram, where everything's about a flash on the screen and an image. And it used to be about help thy fellow man, legacy. And I think about why people do what they do. And I think consistently about the legacy of my grandparents. And both sides of both my grandparents, plus both of them, both were wonderful, both sets. I had four, but particularly my English grandparents, particularly my grandfather. And, you know, sometimes you have a closer connection with one. I was connected to all, but the legacy of him and then the other three, and then my parents, and then Jill's parents. And, you know, this legacy that you honor, how you do one thing, how you do everything. What did they do for me? And what am I passing on? You know, that's an important part of society, right? So, and if you're in a family business, and you said this before, you said, embrace the culture first. There's a legacy to that. And then second, you were talking about a shared vision. I put down work for a shared vision. And then you have this legacy that keeps things going. And that is a wonderful way to honor your father after a horrible, horrible tragedy. Again, I'm sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're there working it through this. And I'm just going to throw a red flag. I just don't go to work, dude. I just don't go to work. There are times when I go to work. There are times. And it's usually when people know what they're supposed to do and don't do it. And I have to go talk to them, which happens nearly every day. So there is an hour of every day that feels like work. But for the most part, I just love people figuring out their passions and going at it. And I don't think your work is a better stereo or a better TV. Your work is a better experience for the family that you're helping, or better personal time for the person that gets the man cave. I mean, I watch TV every day, and I watch the brain. I either watch documentary crazy history stuff, and I'm like, I have this thirst for learning, but I keep learning about the same thing. And it's cultural. There's new cultures, but a lot of it's World War II. Or I watch like Naked and Afraid. And it's literally, I do it because I need an hour where there's no functioning in my brain and I can detox. So there's a legacy to that too. In this role of an entrepreneur taking over the family business and now, you know, a little bit different, what sort of skills are you using? How are you consistently developing those skills? And how has it changed now that you're moving into franchisor?
So, yeah, I've seen a lot of change, especially in the last couple of years, especially because I think the skills needed to be a CEO of a larger organization like a franchise company and the skills needed to run a home automation business are really two separate skills.
Yeah, you're in a career transfer. You're changing your careers again, just within the same company.
And I'm having to shed prior versions of myself to embrace those new skill sets and new learning, right? Additional levels of delegation, additional insights into vision and strategy, right? How do we manage tactics from across a larger group of people? Like those are things that when you're in a small business, you can kind of have your hands on, right? But growth and control are inversely proportional. So as we grow, right, all of a sudden you can't control it all. So now how do we do that? Well, we have to have good people in place. We have to have a good structure. We have to have good accountability. We have to have a culture of discipline. When we set goals, we're going hell or high water to hit those goals. And everybody in that organization has to rally around that. That has to be the culture. And that culture is led by the top, by the leader saying, I set goals and I hit my goals. And I do whatever it takes. And the only reason I'm not going to is if I'm physically incapacitated to not hit a goal. That is the only reason. And I tell my people the second reason you couldn't hit your goal.
That doesn't do it. Yeah, well, then you delegate someone else. I just hear people that now you just ruined my next week. I was physically incapacitated, Matt. No, yeah, then you delegate someone else to take over it. And then you somehow get someone to call them to make sure they did it.
Sure. So, you know, for me, I try not to change the direction too much on my people and let them, you know, set their goal and execute. But that culture is a totally different sort of part of skill sets that have to be communicated constantly, right? Back and forth between the people on our team. And so that's stuff that, yeah, I've had to grow and, you know, a ton back to my thirst for learning and continual progression. My definition of excellence is the willingness to continually improve.
Yeah. So you go from the smaller, and it wasn't small, but you're running a business and you have direct interaction with the people that are having direct interaction with customers, at least, to a larger entity where you're working on culture management, which the skills are listening, communication skills. What else?
Mm-hmm. Vision. Sharing communication of vision, right? Execution framework, meaning, how are we tactically organizing what has to get done? How are we, staying on top of that, whole piece? Cash flow management, financial expertise. I mean, periods of growth require a lot of cash. And so, making sure that that's not mismanaged, that's a whole separate skill set in itself, right? So again, it's shed the past, learn what you've done and form a new person in yourself with those skills.
And a lot of it's a step up in what you, there are definite changes. And, you go from setting goals to asking about goals. You go from managing to coaching. There's still accountability. People aren't hitting their own goals. We're mm-hmm. still going to address what do you got to change to get there or whatever it is. You go from, sharing a vision with a local smaller group to sharing a vision using different tools with the larger group. So you're building on different things, but there are some distinct changes. And usually the biggest change is just get the heck out of the way. And I used to see this at EO. People have a hard time getting over 4 million. And then they have a hard time getting over 10 million. And there were some people that never did and never did. They just got stuck. It's kind of the stick points are 250, 1 million, 4 million, 10 million, 50 million, 100 million. And it's because people have to change how they do things. And sometimes you have to change some of the people there. So now you're working on your culture management, you're further developing and further strengthening your leadership skills. How about the difference with the finance? So you had to go raise some money. You had to go have maybe a different financial role between being a small businessman and going into franchising, because you've got all this huge marketing costs now and franchisee development where you're finding people that want to contribute, invest in mm-hmm. your vision.
Mm-hmm.
What's changed there as you go from small to larger business and how you handle that?
So we're lucky that we've had a successful run of Savvy Home here locally that's provided the cash needed to save.
So
up
you
and
didn't
invest.
Have to raise. Oh, you've
so
been saving.
No. Yep. So again, we're lucky to still be the sole controller of that boat at this stage. Not to say again what cash is going to be needed, but I think as I look at it, it's if you want to get somewhere new, you got to do things you've never done, and that's scary. That's really emotionally fearful of stepping outside that comfort zone that we talk about all the time. So, I figure out how to develop a cash flow report that's accurate, based on our expenses, liabilities due, and cash coming in, right? Like, how do you do that, right? Well, find mentors, find good people, hire a good finance gal that's on our team now, right? That's sort of, helping me do it. Because, I don't necessarily know how to do that. I'm thirsty for the learning. I want to go do it. And with these AI robots, you can sure find out a lot more than you could say, 2 years ago, but you got to have good people around you to sort of help facilitate that. And I'm always maintain that I'm not the smartest person in the room. I just try to go find the smartest people with the best answers and see if they can contribute to our culture. In a franchise business like this, it's a big part of our internal W-2 team, but we have a ton of affiliates from the law team, from the consultants, right, from the marketing affiliates, like a whole bunch of other people that are looking at this as this is the vision, what we can do to redirect the home automation space as a franchise company, which just isn't really being done right now. So that's been exciting to be able to rally a whole different group of people, towards that cause. And hopefully there's money at the end of it when we wake up.
Yeah, and there's definitely a need because it's a fragmented industry, right? Very fragmented.
Yeah.
And you have some big corporate competitors that don't have a great reputation as to knowing what they're doing, right? So if we can organize this fragmented and provide some, there's really service to the community because you don't know what you're getting in certain industries, and that's definitely one of them. You know what the products are. But the products aren't it. The products are right. Half the problem, right?
That's right. Yep. It's the white glove service, that we really, try to deliver and satisfy that do it for me clientele, who want their technology to work but don't want to touch it, you know? So that's where our market lies.
We've all heard of DIY, but the DFM are the real ones. The real ones you got to go after.
That's right.
Yeah, and I'm one of them. Yeah. I don't know how to DIY.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, Jill's sick of me trying to do it too, because usually it ends up costing twice as much. So are you surprised at where you're at now? When you look back at the Boulder start, and where do you live right now?
Endeavor. Yeah.
The Boulder start, the Denver end. I didn't know if you lived in Denver or Boulder. I thought it was Denver. I knew it was Denver because we had the baseball thing that I called you about
last time I saw you. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you surprised by where you're at?
Surprised? Every day is a new surprise. I mean, I don't know. I'm thankful for where I am. I feel like I got an early start with the College Works opportunity to start to learn these real skill sets and apply them in my life and get on that trajectory at 20 years old. So I guess I'm surprised, being I just turned 40, Matt. Wow. You know, so that's exciting.
I only wish. Those were good years. That's a great decade.
Yeah. So like I got, you know, a bunch of years in front of me that, you know, I still feel we can accomplish a lot, but I'm thankful for how far along I am. And I only contribute that to the mentors that I had early on to kick me out the door, you know, to be skiing Monday, Wednesday, Friday, going to class Tuesday and Thursdays, doing estimates Saturdays and Sundays while my friends are sitting back watching the tube, drinking beers. You know, going to the bars.
Think about how much time is wasted.
They're like, Gavin, what are you doing? I'm waking up, you know, grinding. And, you know, a lot of those guys are still drinking beers, watching the tube, and I'm running a franchise company. So there's, you know, there's just different trajectories to get to where you want to go. And eventually, like I said, you got to decide what you're really after and if you want to be willing to make that commitment.
What's the one you think about, the sacrifice that you made back then? You think back to that, you're always thinking, so glad I made that sacrifice. What was it?
To me, it's about sacrificing your time and your desire and want, you know, for other things. Because it's too easy to look at balance in your life as like, work really hard during the week and then it's the weekend. I'm balanced. Look at me now. When I'm 50, like, I want the full-on opportunity to pull the plug, retire, do whatever I want to do. So enabled to achieve that lifelong balance, I need to work really hard right now. And there's going to be periods that are completely unbalanced. And, you know, and right now in my business growth cycle, it's one of them. I mean, I've got so many things coming at me really fast. And I got to put a pause and set the expectations with the wife around traveling around the country, flying the Savvy Home flag, right? Like, that's a difficult discussion, and that's all out of whack. You know, it comes back to that bigger picture. So that's sacrifice all the time, man.
You're happy about being unbalanced at certain times to be balanced in the long run.
Yep.
I used to think about retiring at 52. You know what happens when you turn 50? You realize you'll die if you retire. What the hell are you going to do? Like, what am I going to do? Am I going to go skiing every day? Like, I mountain bike so much I can barely walk. I can't do any other exercise because my shoulders don't work anymore because of all my skiing and mountain biking exercise. You're not going to retire. Your brain's going to drift into nothingness, but you want the freedom. Yeah, I got the freedom. I decided not to retire.
There you go.
And I cannot imagine the conversation with Lulu, I went to Saudi Arabia with Lulu. We had to get special permission from the king of Saudi Arabia, which we had in writing that we showed to the hotel. One of his sons was in EO. And the hotel didn't believe that we had special permission to allow Lulu, and there was 110 people there, it had to have been 5 women, maybe 7 women, and they weren't allowed to be in the same room. But Lulu's there, and she's got her burqa on, and I got pictures of Lulu standing. My screensaver, and I'll show it to you right now, my screensaver is nice. The empty corridor of Saudi Arabia, and maybe Lulu took this picture. I've got another one just like it with her standing right next to me. She is a world traveler. I remember when she used to go to Necker Island and hang out with Branson all the time. Because she's fluent in Chinese and she's a businesswoman that's super savvy. You never know what opportunity is going to pop up if you're prepared, right? And you had to sit her down and say, we're not traveling for a while. I can't even imagine. And Lulu is a strong woman. You don't tell Lulu no. You do not tell Lulu no. By the way, Lulu's episode is number 99. If you're interested in hearing Lulu's episode, she's kicking ass just like Gavin. Gavin can be found at SavvyHomeFranchise.com with two A's, SAAVI. It's always fun to catch up with you, Gavin. I know I will be in Denver soon with a last minute late call to go to Red Rocks. Or don't forget, I can get you baseball tickets to go to the baseball game, to go to hockey or basketball or something awesome, because it's always a pleasure to see Gavin. Didn't get to see the kids this time. I got to see him during Lulu's podcast, so you might have to go get him if you're at home. But thank you very much for coming on the Edge of Excellence and sharing your wisdom and insight for all these people that want to be like you.
Cool. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode today on the Edge of Excellence podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to this. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this exact episode with them. This show exists to showcase what is possible when young leaders are willing to step out of their comfort zone and choose to excel in their lives. To learn more about our internship for young and ambitious students, www.oneinternship.com/podcast to see if it's something that makes sense for you. Once again, it is www.oneinternship.com/podcast. Let this be a reminder for you to live on the edge of excellence in your business and life. See you next time.